This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show, Morgan Reynolds, former chief economist for the Department of Labor in the Bush administration and perhaps the first prominent American political figure to speak out against 9/11. He has been very consistent, very outspoken, and I admire him greatly for that. Morgan, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me once again, Jim.
A real pleasure. And of course, as you and I know, we thought we'd start off the first hour of the show talking about the latest current event, namely this fantasy killing of Osama bin Laden, who actually, based upon all the evidence that most of us have been studying for many years, died on or about 15 December 2001. It's really quite fantastic, Morgan, that the Obama administration did trot him out and then, veil it with all this, really bullshit about it. I must have a dozen articles or more on my Facebook page under James Henry Fetzer that are going into this and explaining all the problems with it. And didn't it strike you as just overwhelmingly fantastic the way this was being portrayed?
Reminds me of the movie El Cid. Remember, Charlton Heston, I believe, was in the lead, and since all of the followers believed in his greatness and immortality, they strapped him to that horse and bounced him out to the battlefield to lead them to victory. In other words, we just need to revive this body and keep the thing going. I was traveling, actually up to your area, Chicago and Madison. Between Tuesday and Saturday. And it was a kind of a reunion, small,
okay.
Only four of us, kind of going back on campus after arriving there 50 years ago. And we had a wonderful time. But I'm in the airport here in Little Rock, and I pick up the Wall Street Journal Tuesday morning. So they've had enough time from the announcement Sunday night. And they must have had a dozen stories plus in the Section 1 in the Wall Street Journal. And here's the flavor of it. Obama's Finest Hour. And this is by Brett Stevens, who then includes a poster from World War II, which shows the American fist and almost a Superman-like figure, avenge December 7th. You know, and we see the USS Arizona going down. So what stirs a wounded nation? That's the caption. And then we've got, if we turn the page, victory in Abbottabad, okay? A measure of justice for the... I hate that word justice in this context.
Yes, yes.
Since even if this were true, they murdered a guy and then quickly disposed of his body and et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
And
there was no due process to this whatsoever,
no,
Morgan. I mean,
no. Their account is just evil on its own basis, even if it were true. And then let me cite one more thing from the media, and that is... my local Arkansas paper carried the L.A. Times editorial, which is headlined, Gunning for OBL. Okay, and then the last two paragraphs read, some officials insist that capture was a possibility. We'd like to think that the people in charge planned for the possibility of capture. There would have been something uplifting, something to be proud of, if bin Laden had been brought home and publicly held to account for his many crimes. Close quote. Well, you know what this reminds me of? How about let's put Lee Harvey Oswald on trial?
Right.
Where he for the assassination of President John F. Kennedy,
right.
Back in 1963. Well, there's no way that you could possibly do this. So guess what? He was gunned down. Jack Ruby was ordered to gun him down.
Yeah.
So this is no different. How? And here's the overarching comment I had. I could barely bring myself to watch anything or read anything about this. Because of the uniformity of the corporate media and the complete gullibility and evilness of it, because there's not a thinking mind that I could find in my I shunned most of this because it was so uniform. So don't tell me it was hard to control the media on 9/11. Come on, it's just preposterous. You know, whatever happened to the hard whiskey drinking cynical journalists that used to form, you know, the heart of the force of state?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, anyone who's done any serious research into 9/11 knows that Osama's long dead, that he died, you know, in 2001. David Ray Griffin even published a book about it, Osama bin Laden Dead or Alive, 2009. I mean, this is completely ridiculous. I felt the same way, Morgan. I thought, my God, is this ever a demonstration of the massive control of the media? There wasn't a single dissenting voice to be heard anywhere. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, nowhere. Not in the New York Times, not in the Wisconsin State Journal, not, as you observe, in the Wall Street Journal. This is shameless. It is disgraceful.
Well, and they parade and preen as if they are independent. In a way, the Soviet Union was more honest. It's our official state media. You know, there's no pretense, really.
I love that. Being
an independent journalism source.
Yeah, the high point in research on this came when Ed Haas contacted the FBI and Rex Toom told him that the reason why there was nothing about 9/11 on the wanted poster for Osama bin Laden was because the FBI had no hard evidence that connected Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. That is the greatest statement of candor in the history of this entire 9/11 episode, Morgan.
Yeah, in order to bring a grand jury indictment, they actually have to offer evidence. And of course, the other government officials have admitted that none of their stuff about 9/11 could withstand court of law standards, criminal prosecution. Now, here's the overall arching thing, and the reason why we can legitimately mock the media and point out their deficiencies in this case. First of all, the government never offered any forensic scientific evidence in favor of their claims. None. Secondly, they offered no eyewitnesses to this event and still haven't, to my knowledge. So, and furthermore, it would be in their interest to show us a hero, a Navy SEAL, who led the assault or gunned down OBL. They haven't done that either.
Well,
aren't good enough. They are not good enough to pull off anything where we could examine the evidence.
Well, I think that's right. And then the unbelievable photograph of Biden and Obama and Hillary and all that watching the screen, which was supposed to be the actual events taking place in which Osama was killed, and Hillary has her hand to her mouth, like gasping at what she's seen. And it's all staged. It was all phony.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I was inside the government at nearly the highest levels, and I know. Well, I remember Ronald Reagan said, "This is just like show business."
It is show business. No wonder he was such a success. Morgan, I thought we might use an article that's just come from InfoWars, written by Paul Joseph Watson, who I found to be a very, very good reporter, actually.
It's a good article.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's enumerating 10 facts that prove the bin Laden fable is a contrived hoax. I thought I'd read what he says and then invite your comments on it.
Okay.
Here's the first one he says. Before last Sunday's raid, every intelligence analyst, geopolitical commentator, or head of state where this assault was on record as saying is Osama bin Laden was already dead and that he probably died many years ago. From veteran CIA officer Robert Baird to former Pakistan Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto to former FBI head of counterterrorism Dale Watson. In addition, back in 2002, Alex Jones was told directly by two separate high-level sources that bin Laden was already dead and his death would be announced at the most politically opportune moment. Top U.S. government insider Dr. Steve Priznik, a man who held numerous different influential positions under five presidents, serving as a deputy assistant secretary of state under Nixon, Ford, and Carter, told Alex Jones last week that bin Laden died of Marfan syndrome shortly after he was visited by CIA physicians at the American Hospital in Dubai in July 2001. Well, it was actually December 15th, so it was about 5 months later. But this Priznik, Morgan, you're going to learn, is really a deep insider, and he's actually explained that 9/11 was a fraud, was a inside job, and of course also made the remark about this being a hoax as far as killing him twice.
A couple of reactions. First of all, of course, we have no body, carcass of OBL, so we don't have complete certainty. But the highest likelihood is, and I think there's credibility here in all these opinions which point in this direction. I recall a recent email from John Lears, who claims OBL was killed or died on December 16, 2001. So there's a lot of credibility here. There's all this previous intel that Paul Joseph Watson is citing.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right.
We don't have any positive evidence to the contrary, because all these, the handful of videos and audio tapes have been shown by trustworthy sources to my satisfaction, especially the videos are transparently fraudulent.
Yes, yes.
So we don't have any positive data that OBL has done anything, we don't have any eyewitness testimony, et cetera. And then finally, of course, there's the macro view, which is this guy could not possibly have pulled off 9/11, especially when you know more, you scratch the surface and
yes.
go, for example, to Dr. Wood's book about what really
yes.
happened at the World Trade Center.
Yes, so, which we're going to talk about the second hour, by the way, for our listeners to anticipate. Here's the second point he makes, Morgan. The official narrative of how the raid unfolded completely collapsed within days of its announcements. First, there had been a 40-minute shootout. Then there was no shootout, and just one man was armed. First, Bin Laden was armed. Then he was not. First, Bin Laden used his wife as a human shield. And then he did not. First, the compound was described as a million-dollar mansion. Then it turned out to be a rubbish-strewn, dilapidated compound that was worth less than a quarter of that. Almost every single aspect of the official narrative has changed since Obama first described the raid last Sunday as the White House struggles to keep its story straight.
Hey, remember the Three Dog Night group? Great rock singers.
Yeah.
And I keep hearing this refrain, liar, liar, liar. Truth tellers don't have this problem of
That's
reversing
right.
themselves
That's
and
right.
changing their account.
That's
Come
right.
on, this is like these Pentagon bangled guys before the 9/11 Commission telling different stories, mm-hmm. and then the 9/11 Commission saying, oh, well, they don't call them wrong, but they just say they were mistaken, and here's the real account to try and make it coherent.
Yeah.
So it's just, liars get in trouble.
Uh-huh. Right. I agree completely. Here's a third claim. The alleged body of Bin Laden was hastily dumped in the sea to prevent any proper procedure of identification. The White House claimed this was in accordance with normal Islamic burial rituals, but numerous Muslim scholars all over the globe disputed it, pointing out that Muslims are only buried at sea if they die at sea. While the White House claimed that Bin Laden's death on May 1st was proven by DNA and facial recognition evidence, such proof was never released for public scrutiny, and the Obama administration refused to release photos of Bin Laden's dead body, suggesting a cover-up.
Imagine the police operated this way.
I know.
You know, the municipal police, where they would
right.
just, hey, well, we killed this man, he's a criminal, and we disposed of his body, and take my word for it, it's a DNA match to
yeah.
Evidence we found at the scene of the crime. You just
yeah.
take my word for it, okay?
Yeah. Well, one of the dozen or more articles I have posted on my Facebook page under James Henry Fetzer is from a DNA expert who said there's no possible way you could go through all the steps or procedures necessary to establish a DNA identification, the amount of time that the government was attributing to this process, which he says is a monstrous falsification of the story given here. I interviewed Kevin Barrett last week about this, and he pointed out to me that it is not a Muslim custom to bury bodies at sea where they're going to be devoured by the fish and the crabs and all that, that that's very disrespectful to bodies. And, of course, the official story, I mean, the story that was reported back in December 2001 was that he was buried in the ground in an unmarked burial site, you know, right at the time, which would be in accordance with Muslim practice. So all this appears to be complete and happy horseshit.
I can just see Arab Muslims in the middle of the Arabian Desert making haste to get to the ocean within 24 hours.
I'm reminded of the transcript of Flight 93, where when the terrorists are allegedly going to deliberately crash the plane so that the passengers can't reclaim it, they say, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. Of course, God is great, God is great. But as a Muslim member of scholars wrote to me, he pointed out that that's wrong, that there's a Muslim prayer for every occasion, and if you're facing imminent death, the prayer you're supposed to say is, there is but one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet, in Arabic, of course, which means that those responsible for that script didn't know enough to get it right. Neither here, too, Morgan.
Yes, and my nurse wife, dear Pat, pointed out this DNA impossibility, and the government didn't even claim they had his DNA to
get a match. Yeah, so how are they going to do the match?
It was supposedly familial.
Yeah, right. Sure.
This just annoys me, and let me take a swipe at America, too.
Yes.
Okay, Philadelphia Phillies and the New York Mets are playing, and then, you know, word spreads, and the bloodlust of Americans really boils my oil, okay? And the unquestioning faith, you know, this is all tribal. It's the primitive part of the human brain.
Yes.
You know, follow the leader.
Yes.
It's waving the bloody flag, and the bloody flag is false.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Elias Davidson, whom we both respect, an excellent 9/11 scholar presently residing in Germany, published an article describing what the White House was claiming had happened as barbarism. Because, I mean, if you're just going to go out and start killing people, you know, and not give them any opportunity to defend themselves against your charges, it is simply murder. It's an outright assassination. And for that, you had millions of Americans raving and cheering, and Obama's popularity poll is just skyrocketed, and nobody cares now where he was born or when he was born. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the fact that we're using these predator drones in Pakistan, that's all subsided. The fact that we haven't closed the Guantanamo is also a base that's been covered because they claim that the information that led to his identification came from Guantanamo. This is all complete and utter rubbish, of course, but there it is.
Yeah, let's have KSM. Of course, they nixed that to have him tried in the federal criminal courts. Okay, we're going to have a military tribunal. In other words, it's one scam after the other. When are people, a majority at least, going to wake up?
Yeah, here's his fourth point. Despite the fact that the White House released Situation Room photos, which purported to show Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and the rest of Obama's security staff watching the raid, which killed bin Laden live, it was later admitted by CIA Director Leon Panetta that Obama could not have seen the raid because the live feed was cut off before the Navy SEALs entered the compound. The photos were described by many as having historical significance, forming a captivating record of Obama's greatest success and being the defining moment of his presidency. One image showed Hillary Clinton with her hand over her mouth as if witnessing an anxious or crucial moment in the raid. Media reports at the time claimed the photos represent the moment when the leader of the free world saw the terror chief shot in the left eye. However, the photos were staged as a PR stunt for public consumption. Nobody in the photos ever saw bin Laden killed live, nor did they see the Navy SEALs even enter the compound.
You know, this smacks almost of desperation. Of course, they saw Bush Jr., boy president, go from mediocre ratings of approval, 45% or so, to 90% plus for his fantastic performance on 9/11.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic it was, but
yes.
You know, we were attacked. So,
it was a fantasy.
Unity. Unity,
yes.
Unity. And they, you know, they don't use the word patriotism. They use unity. We've got to be united. And now this will bring us all together. And sure enough, Obama used that term, unity.
Have you seen all the old crowd turn out for this? They've got, you know, Condoleezza Rice was making all the TV appearances, even yeah. Powell was interviewed saying this. George W. sent him a note of congratulation. It was all some kind of vindication of the Bush-Cheney administration. I thought it was about as disgusting as it gets in politics, Morgan.
Yep. Hey, George Wallace. There's not a dime's worth of difference between a D and an I. Especially when it comes to foreign policy and military and the intelligence complex. Really, there's just you're just smoking the wrong dope if you think voting for one or the other matters at these issues.
Here's point five. As even mainstream journalists began to cast suspicion on the official narrative behind the raid, the media reported that Al-Qaeda itself had confirmed every detail of Obama's address to the nation. However, the conduit for such a claim was in fact an organization called SITE, S-I-T-E, which is a notorious propaganda front for the Pentagon run by the daughter of an Israeli spy that has been caught on numerous occasions releasing fake cartoonish Al-Qaeda videos at the most politically expedient times for both the Bush and Obama administrations. The SITE organization is nothing more than a contractor for the U.S. government receiving some $500,000 a year annually from Uncle Sam, and yet the corporate media instantly swallowed and regurgitated the claim that Al-Qaeda had confirmed the official story after SITE directed them to an anonymous posting on an Islamic website.
Yeah. I don't know the facts here, but it's certainly plausible. And the idea that the CIA and the Pentagon, et cetera, are hands off on psyoping the American people.
What could be more obvious?
Tell me a better lie.
That's the great thing about terrorism. You know, it's so elusive, Morgan. You can perform any op you want whenever it's politically expedient and blame it on anyone you want. And who's in the position to contradict you? Nobody. I mean, this is absolutely perfect for the political machinations of a devious administration. And I tell you, Morgan, I've had it with Obama. When he came out and stood four square behind his phony birth certificate, I thought that was bad enough. But when he came out and announced Osama was dead and all this, man, it made me want to puke.
Well, and they mentioned Al-Qaeda, of course. Who created Al-Qaeda? Well, it's the CIA name for the base, meaning the database.
Yes.
And then they even admit, oh, this is a loosely organized, you know, a set of terrorists or would-be, wannabe terrorists. But we're supposed to be afraid, very afraid. And then they use this, of course, to hype their, create the make the problem even bigger because now there'll be reprisals we have to guard against, on and on.
I know.
They cook up the problem in the same petri dish. They hand us the solution. It's absolute. It's outrageous. And why more people aren't on to this scam, I don't know. But I would guess, nearly half of the American people, something on that order, know this is a rot gut, at least in their gut, if they haven't studied it. And half of that half, of course, knows a lot more and are on to it. And this is not the growth of that knowledge is not going to be interrupted by this deal.
Yeah. You know, we were mentioning the DNA. I think the easiest way to get a match is you take two samples from the same body, and you claim you've had one for on file, and now you match, and by God, they do turn out to be the same person. Mm. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. Just amazing.
Yeah, one in, 16 trillion.
You're actually going to get a bona fide match.
You're going to have identity.
This is so shameless, Morgan. I mean, I got another five that we'll save for after the break here, but I'm just so embarrassed by this administration. I think the photograph was so phony, and as soon as, Panetta announced that there was a 20 or 25-minute blackout, you knew this whole thing was a fraud.
And let's remember, OBL was our creation, too.
Yes, that's right.
And the Mujahideen to defeat the Soviets in Afghanistan. And you know, this thing, it's like Saddam Hussein. He was our boy.
He was our
Iraq,
boy. That's right.
Know? And then all of a sudden, he's the new Hitler.
And when they made Charlie Wilson's War about the effort in Afghanistan to drive out the Soviet Union, starring Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts, they just happened to omit the part about Osama and his role.
Hey, I see there's a group making a movie about Tora Bora. And this is a story from the L.A. Times. Bin Laden's death, a wrinkle for film on Tora Bora battle.
A wrinkle.
So they don't know how to end the movie now. No. Like, they're talking about that. So there's going to be a major motion picture.
Yeah, well, this will be the perfect way to cap it off. Morgan, we're going to take our first break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Morgan Reynolds. We're talking about the Osama fantasy, first part, second part, Judy's book, Where Do the Towers Go? We'll be right back.
Admits that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Our own FBI acknowledged it has no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to 9/11. But if Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama had nothing to do with 9/11, then who did it? Who did it? The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer. Discover the big picture. Learn what we know now. Find out what it means. 11 experts contribute to exposing the truth as the anatomy of an atrocity. Edited by James H. Fetzer. Buy it now if you have the courage to face the truth. Just don't think you're going to like it. The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer.
Yeah.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Morgan Reynolds, who is the chief economist in the Department of Labor in the Bush administration, and who is a guy who's very perceptive and acute in his remarks about what goes on in the world today. We're talking about the Osama bin Laden, the second death of Osama bin Laden, who actually died on or around 15 December 2001. Morgan, continuing this wonderful summary published on InfoWars by Paul Joseph Wilson, we went through the first five. Here's a sixth point he makes. After every single neighbor that lived near the alleged bin Laden compound in Abbottabad that was interviewed by news reporters said with absolute certainty that they had never seen bin Laden and that they knew of no evidence whatsoever to suggest he lived there. Since the town is a staging ground for the Pakistani military, which has a training facility situated virtually a stone's throw away from the alleged bin Laden compound, residents were required to show ID when they moved into the area. Pakistani troops and anti-terror police in the town refused to confirm that bin Laden had lived in the house. Barack Obama himself admitted to 60 Minutes that the White House was only 55-45 sure that Obama lived there before the raid, and this uncertainty prompted concerns that the U.S. Navy SEAL sent in could have targeted a prince from Dubai or some other individual that was not actually bin Laden.
So the government has yet to present an eyewitness to the alleged murder or killing of Osama bin Laden. And there's just no evidence that he existed there.
Except, of course, for their DNA evidence.
Yeah,
the
right.
DNA
yeah,
evidence,
take my
it?
Word for it.
See,
right.
I mean, the gullible Americans, you know, will buy anything, Morgan. You know, you believe what you want to believe. I mean, and this seems to have created a tidal wave of euphoria for killing the mastermind of the events of 9/11, when in fact he had nothing to do with it. I mean, it's just shameless.
Well, I got to take a swipe here and say it's religion, it's religious, and it's statism. It is, you know, adoration of the state and all of its magnificent works. I've got to point that out as a libertarian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As a form of that,
you know, these magnificent edifices and, you know, they're probably, you know, he's trying to get his own, it's Obama, you know, glory, you know, what's your legacy, and all this stuff in Washington, D.C., so part of the empire is the glorification of our leaders and their organization called the state.
Right, now he's earned his Osama medal that he can wear proudly. You're absolutely right. I mean, even Mussolini, you know, described corporatism as the merge of big government with big business, and where it was typified by militarism and nationalism. And that's exactly what we're finding here. And, of course, what he called corporatism, he allowed, was also known by another name, namely fascism. And I think we can all agree that fascism is a bad thing, and exposing these charades is indispensable if we're going to be able to combat it successfully.
You know, I felt the invasiveness of the state personally and emotionally for a moment there when, I don't fly, but once or twice a year I go through Little Rock, where it's almost a friendly, you know, it's a very human scale airport.
Yes.
And the TSA people are actually nice. I mean, they can be. They vary regionally. Well, I flew back out of O'Hare, and that's the first time I ever stood before that radiation machine, you know, where you put your thumbs on your head, you gotta be, and the guy is telling me he's ordering me around like his dog, okay?
Yeah.
And I said to me, and then there was some kind of delay where he says, says into his microphone, it's a male. And like something new next is going to happen. You know, are we going to escalate from here? And what are you going to do about it, Morgan? In other words, he holds all the cards, okay?
Yeah.
And given that I want to go, you know, ultimately I could say, no, I'm going to turn around and go back and find another way home. But the point is the omnipotence of the state over the individual right now. And people just kind of ignore this or laugh it off. We know that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and et cetera, have been totally erased. You know, they're still there.
While you were traveling, Morgan, there was a report from a Miss USA who said that passing through the TSA official actually inserted his fingers into her vagina repeatedly.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, I know, Miss USA. And little children, little girls are getting molested, too. It's really disgusting.
And then you have the sovereignty of the state and its legal immunity. Of course, they own the courts.
That's right.
You know, only by their lead. Well, that makes them extraordinary. I mean, they are immune. It's like giving the trade unions legal immunity and all these other ad hoc immunities.
Yes.
Or, you know, making the Red Cross not legally liable for bad blood and using transfusions and that spread AIDS. Cutting out these exceptions, there is a powerful one.
Yeah. Well, the companies, you know, immune from legal actions, have no need to take the kinds of precautions and be screen their products the way they would if they knew they were legally liable. So lots of Americans are going to die as a consequence of this lax regulation.
Well, that was in the 19th century. You know, the common law is really great. But legislators intervene to promote jobs and industry. So they give companies, you know, immunities from suits against pollution.
Yeah.
Or certain employment on the job injuries, and they, we're going to substitute this workers' comp system on and on. In other words, kind of the real law, the good law, the universal law, gets corrupted.
Yeah. Here's number 7. The videos released by the White House this past weekend, which purport to show Osama bin Laden making Al-Qaeda tapes in October-November 2010, are almost identical to footage first released by the Pentagon Front Group site nearly 4 years ago. Remember, a May 2010 Washington Post story reported how the CIA had admitted to making fake bin Laden videos. Despite the White House's insistence that the footage of bin Laden is recent, he looks younger and healthier than tapes released almost a decade ago, having apparently dyed his beard black. A separate video that purports to show bin Laden in his compound flicking through satellite TV channels depicts a much older-looking man with a gray beard. Analysts have pointed out that the man has different-shaped ears to real Osama pictures from back in 2001. The doctors also pointed out the fact that the man in the tapes released Saturday has no problem moving his left arm, whereas videos from 2001 clearly illustrate how bin Laden was unable to move his left upper extremity because of a permanent injury probably related to damage to the peripheral nerves. Why the cameraman would film the back of bin Laden's head as he watched his television is also dubious. Residents in the town of Abbottabad claim the man in the television video is not Osama, with one individual claiming that the man labeled by the White House as being bin Laden is actually his neighbor, a man named Akbar Khan.
I think that's self-explanatory. My reaction to I saw one photo where the photographer is off the left shoulder of alleged Osama bin Laden.
Right.
And I thought to now that this thing about the ear discrepancy may well be true, but I thought, well, at least this is a little better job by the government.
Of faking.
You know, fakery, yes.
Well, it turns out ears are just as distinctive as fingerprints, Morgan. They're just as unique to individuals as fingerprints. So the ear discrepancy is significant. And when I discussed with Kevin Barrett, who is, of course, himself a convert to Islam, about the black beard, he pointed out it's contrary to Islam to dye your hair. I mean, that is not something that Osama bin Laden would do.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all, further indications of fakery. Number 8, despite the fact that numerous neocons came out on the days after the alleged raid to erroneously assert that torturing terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay led to the discovery of bin Laden, Osama himself, the supposed world's most wanted terrorist and treasure trove of terror information, despite the fact that he was unarmed, was not taken in for questioning. He was instantly shot in the head, according to the official narrative.
That's another really good point. If this guy is such at the center of it all,
right? If he could tell us everything,
he would be worth preserving for quite a while to get everything we can out of him. So, another very good point.
I published an article long ago explaining why Bush needed terrorism to prop up his phony war on terror, because well, everyone knows that torture brings about false confessions. If he didn't have false confessions to support his war on terror, he'd have nothing to justify it, or virtually nothing, you know. Right. He certainly wouldn't have any confessions. So faking it is necessary. They need torture to promote the whole war on terror. Here's number nine. The U.S. government has been caught on several occasions within the past decade staging military operations for the purposes of generating contrived pro-war sentiment among the American people. Both the rescue of Jessica Lynch and the death of Paul Tillman were complete fables, scripted and staged at complete odds with the truth and unleashed on Americans as part of a psychological warfare offensive to elicit support for the war on terror, almost identical to what we're seeing now with the Bin Laden sideshow. Given the fact that the U.S. government has been caught red-handed scripting tales of pure fiction in order to justify the war on terror, notably in the cases of Jessica Lynch and Pat Tillman, why on earth should we believe them now?
Yeah, those are good precedents in this so-called war on terror and invasion of smaller, less able countries. But, of course, this, as Webster Tarpley would point out, goes back further than insurance fraud. In other words, this whole thing, governments have been doing showbiz and committing fraud, and a lot of Americans can't wrap their arms around it. It's just dismissed as a conspiratorial delusion and tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
One of the four on our little reunion tour, my brother and I got into it briefly, and he just knows what he saw. And I said, you know, Dell, this isn't a collapse, you know. It is a building. Collapses don't generate this kind of dust. You can see stuff, okay?
Sure.
Solid stuff that is not fine powder. And this, and he just wouldn't. I said, you know, you go on. Hey, what happened to that stuff? You know, the seismic signature, on and on.
Yeah.
But he's not going to go there. He just is all in when the government deals with, I guess, the military, industrial, and foreign policy issues. You
Isn't
know?
It's it like stunning, Morgan, how many Americans have absolutely closed minds on this? I mean, they're just not willing to consider even remotely that something could be amiss about 9/11.
It is, and I really go back to what Gerard Holmgren once said, the now deceased Australian brilliant 9/11 researcher, and that is open-mindedness or the ability to divine the truth on matters like this is inversely correlated with education. The more education you got, the more likely you are to be psyoped and very conventional and mainstream. It's just like the tenure sieve. You almost kind of eliminate all the rebels and the fringe guys who might come up with something radically new that's useful.
Yes. Shocking, but you know, if that's true, you would think it should be just the opposite. But
respectability most people are conformist.
And so. Blacks who have been conned so much of their lives probably have an easier time seeing through bullshit than do most white Americans.
I can vouch for that. They after being interviewed on a few inner city radio stations, it's overwhelming. The culture is. You know, come on, you know, this is a scam, the 9/11 thing.
Well, you know, the Jessica Lynch story in which the government put out this phony story about her being in a hospital and Iraqis came in and she grabbed a weapon and shot him down and all that, she was so embarrassed by that story that she had to set the record straight. I think that's so admirable.
You know what I'm thinking is that's a reason that they're not going to trot out a couple of real Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
To report, to put in front of microphones or conduct interviews.
Yeah.
Because there's too much integrity at the, tip of the arrow here.
Yeah.
You know?
I think a lot of the astronauts were actually embarrassed by their role in the whole faking of the moon landings. I mean, it's just stunning when you get into it.
Hence, three of them were killed.
Yeah, and I think that's because Grissom, one of the three, wasn't going to put up with any guff. He had been talking about how the thing was ridiculous. They couldn't get the moon lander to operate in the strong gravitational field of Earth. How could it ever work successfully on the moon and all that? And they took him out by filling the capsule with pure oxygen and then burned him to death. I mean, it was awful.
Yeah, he had hung a lemon from the ceiling.
That's
there.
Right. He'd hung a lemon as
come
a symbol.
Come on, this
I
is
know.
All trash.
I know it. It's
government assembled trash.
Boy, if there's anything Americans are less willing to open their minds about than 9/11, it's the moon landings, Morgan. It's unreal.
Yeah, there's very little questioning of that, even though there's enormous problems with the government story.
Oh, I know.
I've seen one report that only something like 7% of Americans doubt that we landed a man on the moon and returned safely.
And one of the strongest arguments, of course, is supposed to be the moon rocks, but it turns out that Wernher von Braun actually led an expedition to the Antarctica to collect moon rocks that had been dislodged from the surface of the moon by asteroids and so forth, caught in the Earth's gravitational field and been brought down to Earth so they could be produced, as actual bona fide moon rocks. All the geologists would agree. They just didn't know that the way in which they wound up on Earth had nothing to do with these alleged flights.
Yeah.
Very embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't know that story.
Yeah, yeah.
But, my number one two remarks. One, number one problem was the Van Allen radiation belt, which goes out in two rings for 50,000 miles. The other thing is somebody I knew was down there in Clear Lake near Houston where NASA, and this was the alleged, the lunar lander.
Yeah.
He just started laughing. and other people have pointed out with that alleged space apparatus, you can't even get in or out of the door.
Yeah,
in that thing, it's just, you see this thing. It's just a pathetic, piece of equipment.
Jack White's
off track anyway.
Well, Jack White's done some brilliant studies about. Well, it's conspiracies. It's hoaxes. It's the American people being taken in. So it's. It's right in there. And Pat Tillman, of course, the story's even more atrocious. It turns out that he had become disillusioned with the war. He'd actually made contact with Noam Chomsky, which may have been a fatal mistake because he was shot three times in the forehead. He was deliberately killed there. It's very evident, Morgan.
Yeah. His family, I know, is on a campaign and... God be with him.
I know. I published an article entitled "Has Cheney Been Murdering Americans?" in which was initiated by the revelation that there was an assassination ring being run out of the vice president's office, and I discussed the death of Senator Paul Wellstone, and also talked about Pat Tillman and a couple other cases that are very suspicious. But it's very clear to me. Tillman was taken out because Bush and Cheney were worried he'd come home and become an icon for the anti-war movement.
Right. Even if they weren't the villains, that's the obvious rationale for murdering him.
Here's point number 10. Despite the fact that Obama announced last Sunday on live television that the world was now safer because bin Laden was dead, his administration, with the aid of the fear-mongering mass media, instantly seized upon the situation to terrify Americans into being afraid of imminent reprisal terror attacks within the United States, later claiming that bin Laden had formulated an aspirational rather than operational plan to derail U.S. trains that travel over 500 miles an hour, even though no trains in the U.S. actually travel at that speed. This led terror experts to salivate over how TSA agents were now needed in shopping malls to stick their hands down Americans' pants, while New York Senator Chuck E. Schumer called for the no-fly list to be expanded to trains and subways. Obama hurried to Ground Zero for a photo op as he desperately tried to use the bin Laden hoax to whip up phony patriotism as a means for boosting his flagging poll numbers. Others, like Democrat Bill Richardson, exploited the situation to try and push through policies that had no connection with terrorism at all, like cap and trade. The haste with which the whole bin Laden fable was exploited for political point scoring and psychological ploy to return Americans to a post 9/11 state of intellectual castration was painfully transparent, clearly suggesting the entire farce was planned well in advance to achieve precisely those goals in the run-up to 2012. Really embarrassing.
Yeah, we're,
really
I cannot grin, but what can you do? You just say grin and bear it. It's just, as you said, you used a good word. It's shameless. It is so low grade. And to me, it goes back to the perps, how clever these guys are. For example, using exotic weaponry to turn the towers to dust. I mean, that's really, really, really nice work. And not using planes, but convincing all of America that, you know, airliners went into these four locations, on and on. It's just, they got to be, of course, they have had a lot of time, and you just got to be knee slapping every day. And this one is more of the same. You know, how can people swallow this? I'm on in years and cynical, I guess, but it's just mind-boggling. They know more about psychology than I'll ever know.
Yeah, well, it's really stunning stuff. And it, to me, it's grossly embarrassing that the great country, the United States, has descended to this level of lies and deceptions, Morgan. I mean, you get the feeling that the government is investing more time and effort on covering up, for example, the true causes of the death of JFK or the phony events of 9/11 than it is in doing anything constructive for the country. I mean, it's just astounding to me.
You know, as we approach the 10th anniversary of 9/11, I got to admit, they're going to get away with it. But it's worked, for sure. If you look, I have an article on my website, nomoregames.net, which tracks the defense budget. You know, the problem confronting with the fall of the Soviet Union, that was 1991. Hey, you didn't have a realistic, worthy enemy, you know, a credible bogeyman. So it's remarkable how they gin this up. You know, you look around, well, okay, the Muslim world was a candidate, okay? So they pulled off 9/11. Now, during the 90s, the nominal or, you know, the as quoted expenditure on defense was actually lower than it was in 1990, okay? In other words, it was eroding. The mission wasn't there. What was the future? You know, you just didn't have a real good enemy.
Yeah.
And then with 9/11, of course, we went from under $300 billion to approaching $1 trillion just on the defense intel complex. So it's just, it was bonanza. You know, take a company, a well-known company like Boeing. Half of their revenues come from the military intelligence complex. Half. You think of them as a commercial aircraft producer, but hey, that's only half true.
Yes, yes.
So they turned that around, you know. And to see how far they can stretch it, you know, some people have credibly proposed, well, when this one wears out or is, you know, the credulity is good enough that we've worn it out. Well, they're going to do the extraterrestrial.
Yes.
And it looks like, yeah, well, they could pull that off, you know. Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, intelligent life doesn't exist somewhere else in the universe. It almost certainly does.
Yes. The probability is overwhelming that life does exist elsewhere in the universe.
But, you know, it's just, what a racket. It's just totally.
Morgan, before we shift gears for the second part of the show, let me just mention to everybody, if they want to Google, do a search on, has nanothermite been oversold to the 9/11 truth community? We're going to begin there when we return. A fascinating study has been done by a chemical engineer that suggests that nanothermite does not have the properties attributed to it by the, well, they're sometimes called thermite sniffers. We'll start there when we return. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal with my very special guest today, Morgan Reynolds. We'll be right back.
Veer Radio is listener supported. We need your donations to pay for live internet streaming radio. Our toll-free call-in number,
and our website. Free MP3 archive links and interactive forums. RadioNetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button.
Executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Morgan Reynolds, who's been an astute and outspoken critic of the government's official account of 9/11, which is astoundingly inept when you get into it, because virtually every claim the government has made turns out to be provably false. I think they selected the right guy, however, to put it together, and Philip Zelikow, Morgan, who, as you I'm sure are aware, had as his area of academic specialization the creation and maintenance of public myths, M-Y-T-H-S, which is, of course, what he gave us with the 9/11 report, which, by the way, he had authored a year before he shared it with any member of the staff.
It read like a novel because it is a novel.
Yes! Isn't it amazing? Now, let's start with this nanothermite thing. We got this wonderful guy, and I've been in a research group. We've been kicking this around for months and months, and maybe even a year, about what, you know, the properties of nanothermite, because he's a chemical engineer and he's very patient and painstaking. His name is T. Mark Hightower. He has a BS and an MS in chemical engineering. He's been prominent in the industry and in the space program as well. He has discovered that the claims made for thermite being explosive, the claim that nanothermite is explosive, are, you know, not just exaggerated, they aren't even true. That the only way you can make nanothermite explosive is to combine it with explosives, which, as I've observed on more than one occasion, is also true of toothpaste.
Right. Well, yeah, they end up with a kitchen sink theory in order to save their bogus, you know, prime mover, which is nano. It sounded better if it was nanothermite, right? You know,
yeah,
fine powder.
Right. I think that was part of the move to try to make it remotely plausible that they had something that was not a mere incendiary, so that it was a bit of hocus pocus.
Well, you know, I don't like to call people misleaders or disinformers, but after all these years, you know, we've got Richard Gage and Stephen Jones, perhaps most prominently, and you really got to wonder if they are not leading the charge in the tradition of V.I. Lenin, who reportedly said, "We shall control the opposition by leading it."
Yes, yes, yes,
you know,
yes.
Because,
yes.
You know, these are not unintelligent people. So if this error persists, if you keep pushing a falsehood, you got to wonder ultimately, hey, are these people of good faith, of good intentions or not?
Well, again, Morgan, you know, like with 9/11 and with JFK, I mean, is our government doing nothing but spending all its time and effort to feeding us false stories? You know, nothing but propaganda and disinformation, like this Osama dying for the second time? I mean, it's incredible.
It is. What to the length to which they will go. That takes me back to March 2003. When I was fresh off my 16 months in government, and the invasion of or the attack of Iraq, who poses no threat to the USA, began, and that's when it occurred to me. I said, if they, I, as other shrewd insiders or wise, alert people inside the Beltway, knew this was all on false pretext. So, what else would they lie about? Look around. That's the first thing that comes to mind. 9/11. I said, "Uh-oh." And you know, from that point, I began pursuing 9/11. And then David Ray Griffin's book came out, "The New Pearl Harbor." What, in early 2004, I believe. And things haven't been the same with me since.
Morgan, here's a report I've just got. It says, Abbottabad residents, operation of killing bin Laden a hoax. An eyewitness in Pakistan said, "We are not fools. It's America and the dirty American policies. Whenever they want to take control of an area, they act this way. Osama was never here. America wants to destroy the image of the Pakistan army. Pakistan President Asif al-Azardi has denied that Pakistan knew about Osama's presence in the country, and those who live close to this compound say bin Laden was never in that house."
Very good. I'm loving it.
Isn't this something?
This is great how rapidly this is falling apart.
I know, it's stunning,
They got egg all over their face.
I think so, too. I think it was a bridge too far, Morgan. I think it was a bridge too far. I think this is
This can do nothing but help us.
I think so,
9/11
too.
Itself.
I think so, too. If they're going to lie about Bin Laden, what else are they going to lie about? You know, and it makes 9/11 extremely suspicious, every point of view.
So, I'm applauding these developments. This is great.
So am I. Well, this business with nanothermite.
Hey, if we go back, merits one more remark.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what the real motive is, or multiple motives. That's always perhaps hard to, not always, but often hard to discern. But that was a plausible motive. In other words, undermine the credibility of the Pakistani military and intelligence, and create a failed state, and allow the U.S. to muscle in again and once again, another nation.
Yeah, make it look like the Pakistanis were complicit, you know, that they were somehow shielding or hiding Bin Laden. I mean, there are good reasons why Pakistan would have no knowledge of his presence. He wasn't there.
Right.
I mean, Morgan, this is just absolutely...
I want them to trot out 3 Navy SEALs, okay, on this raid. I mean, you're going to have a hard time, I think, getting 3 Navy SEALs. Now, it's true. You commanded, 400 Marines at a time, that kind of thing, and you can get them to do anything.
Maybe it's not to do anything, you know? Hang on a second. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I had 300 recruits and 15 drill instructors under my control, my command, when I was supervising recruit training at San Diego. Yeah, that was in 1995-96.
But, you know, there's some integrity there.
I mean, 1965-66, Morgan. 65-66. Go ahead.
Okay, but I'm just saying, you tried out 3 Navy SEALs, real confirmable Navy SEALs, and have them tell us about the raid, and I want Q&A with the press.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, I can't get them under oath and hostile cross examination, but
yeah.
I'll settle for, you don't read a press statement, okay? Q&A, and let's not have a complete laydown by the media. So I'm wondering, the Obama and company, liars that they are, the whole state, they're getting some incoming, and they're going to have to try and maybe put out the fires here.
I agree. I think this is an overreach. I think the bridge too far fits perfectly, and I think it's exposing that the whole story, official story of 9/11, was a house of cards, Morgan. I think it actually has the potential to expose it.
This may be our big break.
It might be our big break.
We kept waiting for, the most plausible, but we'll get an insider to write it out. Well, hey, this is good. They pushed on the throttle a little too hard here, and it blew up.
I know. Too hard, and it blew up. I think that's exactly right, and I think this is a wonderful statement from Pakistan.
Great.
Let me read that again. At Abbottabad residence, Operation Killing Bin Laden a hoax. An eyewitness in Pakistan said, "We are not fools. It's America and the dirty American policies. Whenever they want to take control of an area, they act this way. Osama was never here. America wants to destroy the image of the Pakistan army." Pakistan President Asif Zardari has denied that Pakistan knew about Obama's presence in the country, and those who live close to this compound say Bin Laden was never in that house.
That's only one voice, but we know how skeptical the rest of the world is about 9/11.
Yeah.
Not in America, because we're American, you know, but around the world. So I'm sure, represents, so we just need to keep our ear to the ground and see how much affirmation of that type comes forward.
I think you're absolutely right, and the fact is that the rest of the world understands far better what goes on in terms of these ridiculous charades than do the American people.
These are the people that are getting killed and bombed and living in fear. Yeah, you remember the WikiLeaks that one in a square in Baghdad where they gunned down Apache helicopter, enormous firepower. I can't remember, I think that's the model, but you recall that some months ago. And in other words, these poor folks don't have all this love for the U.S. military to be running their or be in charge in their country, and everybody else being humiliated and living in fear.
What now, just returning to the nanothermite issue, what Mark Hightower has discovered is that nanothermite does not have the exploding gas properties necessary to move objects, meaning it can't perform the kinds of feats that are attributed to it by Steve Jones in his papers and that have been implied or asserted in the new, the claim of finding these unexploded energetic nanothermite residues in the dust. This is all very disturbing, Morgan, because it suggests that even within the 9/11 community, we're being sold a bill of goods by some of those who have the most prominence among us.
Oh, yeah. I knew about long ago, Jim.
That
I don't like calling people out, but what you have here is a movement designed to be embarrassed and found out wrong and therefore delusional and dismissed.
Yeah.
And, the funny part is I'm in a sense more aware of this because I'm a, quote, no planer, unquote. And
yeah.
I've been told to shut up and go away repeatedly. And I'm embarrassing the 9/11 truth movement, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And Dr. Judy Wood is.
Yes.
But,
the three of us are quite a trio here, Morgan, actually, in terms of this, black list of people who are saying things that the 9/11 community doesn't want to hear.
Yeah. So you're on top today, but let's see who's going to win this long run.
Yeah.
And who's closer to the truth and the real story.
Yeah.
And besides, we know as scholars and academics and primarily, hopefully, truth tellers that it doesn't matter so much what's proposed in the short run. It's a matter of what emerges, especially when the evidence settles and accumulates and settles, and who's got the best fit here. You've got to allow for this diversion, this opinion. I know they call for unity, but I'm not a unity guy.
The history of science is replete with competition among alternative research groups. It's absolutely standard in the history of science.
Right.
And the idea that we should all agree on all this is complete and utter nonsense. You read this brilliant book by Jim Watson, The Double Helix, talking about the discovery of the structure of the DNA molecule, and you get a sense for how competition between different groups actually is a spur to discovery in science. It makes a big difference so that, the fact that these guys are in a position where they can try to control the alternative research group is bad science.
I recall that book, and it's wonderful.
It's a wonderful book. Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. And it's really true that competition. Bella Caroli, the great gymnastics coach for the U.S. women's team, says, no competition, no progress.
Yes,
and
that's right.
In my case, when I came out June 9, this article I published in LouRockwell.com, and then it was picked up by other channels and became kind of a, Bush insider blows the whistle on 9/11, says 9/11's a scam. Jim Hoffman attacked me right away, and I was able to respond in short order on these minor differences. He's, saying I'm committing a mortal sin about the destruction of the Twin Towers. But then on the issue of, I said, I don't see the evidence for a plane crash in either tower. And I worked for 8 months in concert with Rick Ryder, then MIT PhD student. in engineering material science. And so it was a long lag before I, and then, boy, you see, he goaded me, Jim Hoffman. And I really, I didn't even know about the Web Fairy or Gerard Holmgren.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Pentagon suspicion.
Yeah.
But so, anyway, the point is, it was a good example of this. Okay, you're being challenged. Well, you got to step up and see if you can prove it.
Well, it was bizarre, Morgan. When I first founded Scholars, the first person to attack me in Scholars was Jim Hoffman. And he did it on a couple of occasions. I thought that was astonishing. I mean, the organization had just getting its feet on the ground. It was taking off like a rocket. And he was trying to subvert and undermine it. And he and his girlfriend's spouse, Victoria Ashley, have proven to be absolutely detrimental. They have published some of the worst, most caustic criticisms of people like you and me and Judy. Victoria, who uses the name Victronics, believe it or not, is the press spokesman for 9/11 Truth and Justice, Morgan. It's really reprehensible and has to raise serious questions about what that organization is all about.
Well, I see this International 9/11 Studies.
Let me get to that. But before we do, okay, I want to read the nanothermite challenge. This is a part of Mark Hightower's paper. He says, he's inviting anyone to find and document peer-reviewed scientific research that demonstrates that a gas-generating nanothermite based upon ferric iron oxide and aluminum, where the gas-generating chemical added to the nanothermite is not itself a high explosive, can be made to be a high explosive with at least a detonation velocity of 2,000 meters a second. The author of this paper will donate $100 for every 1,000 meters a second of detonation velocity that can be documented, the donation not to exceed $1,000. For example, if a detonation velocity of 5,500 meters a second can be documented, then the donation amount will be $550. Only one prize will be awarded in the form of a donation to 9/11 Truth, and it will be awarded based upon the highest detonation velocity that can be documented. And I don't think anyone's going to take it up, Morgan. I don't think anyone's going to take it up.
This will be greeted by silence, but it's very good that this challenge that comes forward. And
I agree. Now, Kevin Ryan has taken exception to it and wrote a very nasty response to Mark Hightower, because Mark quite appropriately sent it to Niels Herit and to others, and is it Dwayne Dietz? Dwayne Dietz immediately wrote back and said, this is very interesting, and he's no longer going to use the phrase explosive nanothermite. Now, that's an appropriate scientific response, but Kevin Ryan has been very nasty, and I think it may be related to this plan for international hearings on the events of 9/11 that's going to take place at, is it Ryerson University? Yes, in Toronto, Ontario, September 8th through 11th, 2001, because Kevin Ryan is the key player, Morgan. And I think Kevin Ryan doesn't want to be embarrassed by the discovery that explosive nanothermite is a non-existent entity.
Well, when I saw this website, at the top, it talks so grandly. I said, oh, this is a group I haven't heard of, and they're going to actually be interested in what events transpired on 9/11, and different researchers and experts will testify, and so on and so forth. And then I go down here and I see, oh, who are they going to have? Oh, Richard Gage, Stephen Jones, David Ray Griffin, Peter Dale Scott, etc., and Kevin Ryan. And I said, where's Dr. Judy Wood?
Right.
Or where is a Morgan Reynolds?
Right.
I'm going,
or a
you know,
Jim Fetzer,
we're not talking,
or
we're
Mark
talking
Hightower.
About a narrow funnel
I
here,
know,
folks.
I know. Very narrow, very provincial, very
even though the first few paragraphs suggest we're going to get, you know, a wide range of views and so on.
Yeah.
Sure.
Morgan, I've written to them, actually, to suggest that they are artificially constricting themselves, and they give Kevin Ryan this key role is inappropriate. And that I cited Mark Hightower's paper, and I suggested they need a broader span, and I even mentioned Judy as somebody that they ought to consider having there. And, you know, you and I...
What do you mean even? I mean, she should be the top researcher invited.
Well, at the very least...
But, of course, it would be boycotted by all these other grand researchers.
Well, just as
now, whatever happened with Kevin Ryan, I really liked him at the beginning. Seemed like a nice man, an honest man, etc. And I actually have used some of his work is quite good. For example, where he challenged the NIST procedures regarding a shotgun simulation of how these alleged aircraft parts disintegrated the building and tore the asbestos off and all this nonsense NIST was doing. So good work there. And yet he's turned into kind of a mean guy.
Nasty guy. He's attacked me. I'll mention that in a moment. I just want to tell everyone how to get here. If you do a search, an internet search for the Toronto hearings, .org, you should be able to turn this up at Ryerson University, Toronto, Ontario, 8, 9, 10, and 11, September 2001, and you can find what we're talking about. Yeah, this Kevin Ryan turns out to be a very nasty guy. I published a piece. There was this guy, what is his name, a prominent investigative journalist who said that 9-11 was a parlor game. So I wrote a piece attacking him, you know, explaining that 9-11 is no truth is no parlor game, and setting him straight. And I you know, I laid out dozens of reasons why he was wrong. And would you believe it? Kevin Ryan turned around and attacked me because of that? And I was forced to respond, and you can find my response under the heading, The Misadventures of Kevin Ryan, because Morgan, every attack he made on me was false. Every single claim he made about me, attempting to debunk me, to discredit at me, was false. I mean, and I say, you know, what kind of a student, what kind of a researcher is this if he can't even study, you know, somebody he wants to attack? And it was pathetic that he was trying to say, you know, why 9-11 really is a parlor game, and I was supposed to be the illustration. I thought it was really crude, corrupt, and inappropriate. I mean, that's Kevin Ryan. Kevin Ryan. The Misadventures of Kevin Ryan.
I recall that some months back.
Yeah. Unbelievable, Morgan. I mean, what's wrong with this guy? He seems to think he's got some kind of proprietary interest in 9-11, like he's the only one who has insight or understanding, you know?
Well, yeah, that reminds me of Jack White, who's a pretty well-anchored guy, remarking in an interview I did with him that, there's too many people who think they're in charge of the investigation.
Oh, I know. Isn't it ridiculous? Too many people who think they're in charge of the investigation.
Yeah.
Morgan, to give ourselves a little more time to talk about Judy and so forth, her appearance on Coast to Coast, I think we'll take our final break now. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Morgan Reynolds. And when we return, we're going to talk about Judy Wood's appearance on Coast to Coast, her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, and related issues. We'll be right back.
Baby said cell research, abortion, cloning, evolution, creation science, intelligent design. These are hot button issues today. Religion and science, morality and government, corporations and fascism. If you want to know what's happening to this nation this very day, then you won't want to miss Render Unto Darwin. After 35 years of teaching logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning, Jim Fetzer offers a critique of the Christian Rights Crusade against science. If you want to understand the issues, if you want to be informed, this is a book you won't want to miss. Render Unto Darwin at Amazon.com and the major bookstores. Render Unto Darwin.
I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her. Gives me everything and tenderly the kiss my lover brings, she brings to me, and I love her. I love like her could never die. As long as I have you near me, bright are the stars that shine, dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her. Stars that shine, dark is the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host, concluding my conversation with Morgan Reynolds today, and we're going to spend the last segment here talking about Judy's recent appearance on Coast to Coast and some studies of her book that are being done by Chuck Baldwin on this very show, and also some thoughts of Morgan about what Chuck has done and what Judy has to say and some of what's in her book, including, of course, discussion of thermite here, Morgan, which we find on page 122 through 124. And I think that, you know, Judy has correctly observed that thermite really doesn't have explosive properties. Do you find the passage exactly where she makes that point? Well, the first thing, the violent effects of thermite on page 122, thermite reactions have many uses. Thermite is not an explosive, but instead operates by exposing a very small area of metal to extremely high temperatures.
Yeah, which is a quote from a couple of scientific articles.
Right.
One of which is titled Thermite Reactions, Their Utilization in the Synthesis and Processing of Materials, a Journal of Material Science back in 92. But before that, in Dr. Wood's own words, quote, thermite is a welding material, comma, not an explosive.
Yes.
Unquote. And in the next few pages, the book goes through various deficiencies in thermite as a destructive agent, the principal destructive agent at the World Trade Center. And in particular, I like this one on page 125, and I quote, "And haven't we seen that it takes a long time for thermite to cut through thin steel? Far longer than the 8 to 11 seconds, the reported time it took the towers to collapse," unquote.
Mark,
so there are devastating counters.
I like another passage here, which is at the proof of concept on page 124. "There is no evidence that thermite, thermate, super thermite, or nano-enhanced thermite have ever been used to bring down major buildings in controlled demolitions as opposed to simply cleaning up debris. Thermite has never been used to bring down skyscrapers." I like mm-hmm. that. And the point yeah. you were making about the amount of time struck me when Jesse Ventura had a 9/11 special and he put some thermite on an isolated beam of steel. And I turned to my wife and said, "Look, it's taking more time for that thermite to cut through that single beam than it did for the whole towers to come down." So I was, you know, struck by that consideration at that very point in time. And I don't think there's anything that's come from Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, Richard Gage, and so forth to overcome that objection.
I had the same reaction.
You know?
And they just cut away from that scene.
I know, they cut away from it. I think it was going to be...
You know, as if this explains what happened at the World Trade Center. It's not even close.
I know!
It was... No, you just you almost need to point out that this is a refutation. It couldn't have been the agent.
I don't think science is Jesse's main point, you know, greatest strength. But although he does make points, you know, extremely good points in a very simple way, like
he's wonderful.
You know how he observes his camping stove, which burns propane, it doesn't melt when he uses it, and yet propane burns hotter than jet fuel, which is just kerosene. You know, I mean, how can you have
and that one he might have gotten from Dr. Wood, because she has pointed that out very well, too, and photos included.
He's been doing a lot, you know, to carry the ball here. I've been very proud of Jesse for his appearances and all these
He's our number one guy, really, to...
He really is, because he's no nonsense, you know.
Bring the word to the masses. Yeah,
he's no nonsense. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of things that bother me just a little. You know, I so admire what Judy has done in her compilation, her collation of all the evidence that we have to explain. She uses this phrase, and she used it, as I recall, on Coast to Coast 2, that empirical evidence is the truth that theory must mimic. But that word mimic bothers me, Morgan. Actually, it should say empirical evidence is the data that theory must explain. If you're mimicking something, you're really repeating it. So that if you're really mimicking the evidence, then you're just doubling the set of evidence. So I don't think that phrase or sentence really quite accomplishes what she intended.
Well, I wouldn't be that strict. I think, it is poetic. I think your criticism is valid. But what Dr. Wood is really pushing and will go down in history as the leading 9/11 scientist is her emphasis on the evidence.
Yeah.
You know, really, so virtually everybody else has ignored this or gone on and assumed this and that and never, I mean, this book is so magnificent. And so... her work is so much about the evidence.
Yes.
So that, now it's not literally true that if you listen carefully, the evidence will tell you what happened and how it was done.
Yes, I fall to
but
that.
Here again, it's just a metaphor or a poetic way to reorient yourself.
Yes.
Don't be so theoretical. Don't be so ready to jump to conclusions because you haven't really looked at the evidence. Look at this. What happened here?
Yes.
It's so extraordinary. From horseshoe bent massive steel beams to round breaks in the windows.
Right.
You know, it's just unprecedented things we have to explain.
Let me just mention a couple of points that Chuck Baldwin has made that have struck me as having some significance. One is that, given Judy's theory that the buildings would turn into very fine dust, shouldn't we expect to find powdered steel in the dust samples? I mean, to the best of my knowledge, powdered steel has not been found in the dust samples, and I just wonder whether that isn't an empirical datum that tends to undermine her theory.
Yeah, powdered from where? We have a chain of custody problem here when you're talking about the composition of the dust, the chemical
yeah.
composition of the dust.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's like. I raise my suspicious hackles when Stephen Jones says this baggie was collected on 9/11 by this woman in a nearby apartment. Take my word for it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not against this kind of analysis, but I don't know that. And furthermore, it wouldn't be decisive in any direction because you could it wouldn't close off the possibility, for example, that in the molecular dissociation that happened here, the dustification. Are you going to literally have steel, kind of 95% iron and 5% alloys, carbon and whatnot? I don't know
yeah.
that it's going to be
yeah.
Chemically the same as before dissociation.
Let me ask you, you're bursting molecules apart. Well, let me ask you this. You raised a question about the chain of custody. Would you agree or disagree that if there were bona fide dust samples, that if Judy's theory is correct, then bona fide dust samples ought to include powdered steel?
No, I wouldn't. I don't know that. I don't know that Dr. Judy Wood knows that. Maybe she does. But I'm worried about if you believe that these buildings were dissociated, including the steel. We saw steel turn to dust, fine dust. in its fall. So
yeah, yeah.
Now, I'd have to know more about the effects of energy weapons to know what that composition of that dust would be, whether it's
yeah.
going to be identical. I don't know that.
Well, I'm just offering a couple of points.
Well, that's my answer.
Yeah. Here's a second one he's raised, Morgan. He's given some close-up studies of some of the toasted cars. And when you get up real close and personal, you see there are a whole lot of little tiny indents in the roofs of these cars, the metal parts. Now, the seats, which appear to be fire retardant, don't seem to have the damage to them. But if you get up and look really closely at some of the roofs of the cars, for example, there are just a vast number of little tiny indents, which Chuck has suggested could be from thermite particles, not nanothermite in particular, but just ordinary thermite, acting like a whole bunch of mini blowtorches, just creating these little tiny dents in the car. And I'm kind of intrigued by that. In other words, Chuck is making more of a case for the use of thermite combined with bona fide explosives, which I think he believes were probably some kind of mini nukes. And we can talk about that too. But what I'm fascinated by what he's doing is trying to push, thermite as an explanatory mechanism to account for some of these phenomena.
Yeah, I'd have real problems with that. Now, you might say, well, it's overlapping hypotheses. In other words, they might have this one effect in common. But I'm going, what? 1,400 cars, some of them blocks away. There's no way that thermite could have that effect at that distance.
Well, that may be a very reasonable point. See, I've been so interested in trying to find ways to differentiate between competing theories that when Chuck has brought up some points that might possibly provide that basis, I've been very interested in them. Here's another. He said about the woman's clothing, catching on fire, or some of the tanks of air that the firefighters were using. If they were hit with thermite, he thought that could easily bring about, specks of thermite. That could bring about an explosion of the tanks of oxygen or her clothing to catch on fire.
Yeah, here again, I'm very skeptical. For one thing, you could show this by experiment if thermite could really do this.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
at some remove from
yeah.
the use of the thermite.
Yeah.
But now you could argue, this is just magic because we don't know enough about the effects of energy weapons. But it just comes across as very plausible that the expansion of this gas inside these tanks would explode it. And, you know, from the eyewitness reports, which are included in Where Did the Towers Go, they're just pop, 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 you know, a group of them. And on dispersed first responders with these. Of course, all the firefighters are carrying these things.
Yeah.
So,
well,
if that's what really happened, I just think you're kind of localized thermite incendiary. You just can't account for it.
Well, let me make an extension of the argument that actually might weigh in Judy's favor. You would think if there were these little tiny blowtorches floating around, that if they hit people's faces, they would cause little burns, and they might look as though they had the measles, for example, you know, a bunch of little tiny burn marks. And I'm unaware that we have that among the first responders.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that leads me right to the nukes, you know, that... I just don't understand this fascination with using nukes, because we don't have this enormous blast with this sudden release of total energy. And I've got over here on the Wikipedia, you know, the effects of a 1 kiloton nuclear blast, which I'm yeah. going to. But and then you have this intense flash of light, you know, and you have tens of millions of degrees. It's temporary. I mean, it's very quick.
Yeah.
And you have, and this brings up the thermal radiation. You have fires, you know. It sets off all these weird effects, including rainfall with enormous drops of water.
Well.
And you know, the various kinds of ionizing radiation. You just look up the standard thing. And, you know, a nuke is, okay, so it would include all this intense heat. And Dr. Wood's book points out all these reports. Very few people remarked about any kind of heat. In fact, some thought it was lower than the ambient temperature, you know, carrying this dust wave. But it wasn't any, you know, you just don't have these nuclear explosion effects. And afterwards, you don't. Furthermore, people, you know, get fire burned, you know, like Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
And they'd be all over. And the way they would, it levels, remember, it's just a high energy form of a kinetic energy. So it levels things the way conventional explosives do, like RDX.
Let me just say, when Richard Gage was here, this is, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or maybe a month ago, I was fascinated by some of the footage he showed of the destruction of the Twin Towers, because it went from an ordinary photographic mode to a thermal mode, and you could actually see the intense heat inside the building that was about 10 floors at a crack, Morgan. It really made me believe that we had explosions that were going on that were taking out like 10 floors at a whack. And if you had 10 floors at a whack per second, then since there are 11 10-floor segments in a 110-story building, that seemed to me to be pretty approximate with what we had observed in terms of the amount of time taken to destroy the building. I mean, I've got to track down Richard Gage and find out where this thermal aspect came from, because it was quite vivid and made an enormous impact and impression in my mind.
He's showing some kind of thermal mapping.
Yeah, of the building as they're coming down, yeah. And you can see these segments of the building that are turning, you know, internally lighting up red, you know, and it's a consistent pattern. I was quite struck. It was the most fascinating part of his presentation by far.
Well, I'll have to, I want to see that too.
I wonder if it's in Blueprint for Truth. You know, I'm going to have to go back and look at that, because, anyway, I mean, it was in an auditorium on a big screen, and it was really quite striking. Let me mention another argument that Chuck has made that I found interesting too. You know, how often Judy's talking about the fuming and the fuzzballs and all that, and it goes on and on and on. And he pointed out, when you're talking about aluminum oxide, which has the chemical formula Al2O3, it has its own oxygen supply. So if there were this residue of thermite beneath the ground, you couldn't extinguish it with water, because it has its own oxygen supply, and it could fume for weeks and weeks and weeks. So he was offering an alternative explanation, too, based upon the residue of the use of thermite.
Well, I'm not an expert, you know, in the kind of the physics he's talking about or the chemistry. But, of course, it wasn't a matter of weeks. It was months and then years. And I think in the book here, you know, for example, that's why the Bankers Trust building went through these different iterations, because of the rustification almost immediately, okay?
Yeah.
And all the trouble they're having trying to build anything there that is durable out of steel. So there's all kinds of, what I can't accept about all of this is ignoring, if we go back, there's so many effects documented by Dr. Wood. And the most important thing that Chuck Baldwin said to me was he accepts all of the evidence that Dr. Judy Wood has assembled in her book. But go buy the book, please. Where did the towers go?
Yeah, and, well, we all agree to do that.
He has trouble with, quote, interpretation, unquote. Now, here's my stake. I want to give you my scientific methodology statement, okay? And it comes from Carl Menger, who wrote Principles of Economics back in 1871, but it wasn't translated into English until 1954, so it didn't have the impact in the English-speaking world it should have. But here's the first sentence in his book. All things are subject to the law of cause and effect. This great principle knows no exception, and we would search in vain in the realm of experience for an example to the contrary. Now, two more sentences, okay, from this first paragraph. Meaning the principle, continued and growing recognition is therefore closely linked to human progress. It's the law of causality, okay? What caused all these effects is what are debating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Disagreement when Chuck Baldwin says, I accept all of her documented effects here. That's what theory must account for.
Not all laws have the form of causal laws overtly. The simple form of laws, like saying copper is a good conductor, is talking about a contemporaneous possession of a property at the same time by something of one kind having that's copper having the property of being a good conductor at the same time. And that has many manifestations that are causal, because when you say something is a good conductor, it means that if you apply heat at one time T1, you're going to get the effect of increased heat at time T2 at another location, or electrical charge from T1 to T2. So it's not quite literally true what was said there, Morgan, but it is the case that every simple law has infinitely many causal manifestations. So, I mean, it's not far off the mark. It's just technically
every
wrong.
Effect has a cause.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Do then is get away from magic or some kind of religious belief. In other words, a lot of times we know, okay, water runs downhill or fire is hot. And the universal law of gravitation is well founded as anything in science. So.
What I'm saying, Morgan, is that there are forms of laws that, although they have causal implications, are not overtly causal.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
You wouldn't have any idea how much work I've done in this area. I mean, this is just one of my things, okay? So I was just making a technical refinement.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly anything we're going to describe as an effect is going to have a cause. It's not necessarily going to be a deterministic cause. It might be a probabilistic or indeterministic cause. But I certainly agree anything we describe as an effect has a cause, and the problem is to figure it out. And this is where Judy has done such brilliant work by laying out the huge range of effects that we have to explain. Now, I do think that when I listened to her coast-to-coast presentation, that I felt that sense of frustration about the vagueness, you know, of how all this is done. You know, she denied she was talking about a beam weapon, which is different than things she said in the past. She was talking about Tesla and vibrations. And it just would have been good if she told us more about that. She did mention Hurricane Aaron, but I swear to God, you know, I've never quite been able to figure out how Hurricane Aaron is supposed to fit into all this. I know in an early, when I first heard her talking about Aaron, I talked on the air about Aaron being potentially the source of the energy that was used to destroy the towers. And she assailed me at the time for saying that wasn't right.
Right, because she never maintained that.
Well, but I think she was maintaining that on coast to coast. I mean, she was saying it was an enormous Tesla coil.
Yeah, I think that there are some parts of weather analysis, meteorology, that we are inadequately informed about.
Sure.
But at a minimum, it's a complete scandal that the media and the government never made us aware that this hurricane was proceeding in a straight line path.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
3 days right to New York City.
Oh, I agree.
And then you know, took a right angle turn or approximately.
Yeah,
and headed
I've seen the
street.
Map. Yeah.
It's,
I think she's
incredible.
She's probably got the map right here somewhere in the book. Wonderful stuff in the book. I mean, George Norrie was being very praising of her book, and I think appropriately so. I think it's a wonderful book. But if you think you've got all the answers in the book, I think that's not the case. I think you've got a wonderful presentation of all the evidence we have to explain, and you have some very suggestive observations about how it may have been done. But I don't see here exactly how to test your hypothesis. You know, that's part of why I was trying to sort out, you know, cases where we could find how we could discriminate between conventional explosives and thermite, say, versus directed energy, and whether the powdered steel and the dust might be one of those. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that interests me from the point of view of the theory of science, Morgan, is to find how we can have crucial tests to discriminate between competing theories.
Remember, one characteristic of Dr. Wood is she wants you to think for yourself. And she may not insist, I have all the answers, here's a neat bundled package for you.
Sure.
I think at a minimum she has led us to know that, hey, there's something incredible. A secret weapon has been used for the first time, much akin or parallel to Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
A new weapon was used, and all this flopping around trying to pretend it's among the known weapons. Their effects don't fit, folks.
Right.
So you call it abracadabra or some other name. She says, I mean, it was energy, and it was directed.
Yeah.
And it is so, okay. Now, on the website, remember, she's working with a 500-page constraint. In fact, the last numbered page is 500, plus the introductory material. Well, there's some material that I helped her, I co-authored. I'm her kind of a high-grade research assistant, editor, etc. And we put out include that material, and of course she's going to do another book. She plans to bring out another book, but about the existence of DEW, directed energy weaponry.
Yeah.
And you know, a minor form of it is mentioned in the second chapter on the jumpers, which is the active denial system.
Well, bear in mind that I was into research on directed energy weapons when I published American Assassination in 2004. I have a whole section in that book
because it
appears to have been used. You know, I had already confirmed that there was a directed energy professional society that had its eighth annual meeting in Hawaii about the time the book was published. So, you know, I'm well aware of the existence of those weapons. Morgan, I hate to say we got to cut it off. It's been great having you here. I'm simply delighted, and I look forward to having you back. And we all think Judy's done a terrific job with her book, so I just can't thank you enough.
Okay, thank you too, Jim.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, Morgan Reynolds, and all of you for listening.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Say. yesterday. Love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to